Coming up on today's Next Fan Up podcast.
Sad day for the fans. This is the show for the fans, by the fans. And if you're a fan of a professional team and they leave your town, that's a sad day, man.
But
not everyone loves this violent, barbaric, misogynistic, capitalistic, imperial game, tyrannical game that we love so much in America.
A whole bunch of different angles to take when it comes to the risky business of moving teams in the NFL. Here we go.
Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Super Fans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello and welcome to this move-in edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. I am Pod Vader here with a litany of super fans here to talk to you about what the fans want to talk about, and that is issues that are directly impacting you. And I am specifically referencing the Las Vegas Raiders of Oakland, or is it the Oakland Raiders of Las Vegas? I'm not quite sure how I want to put that together yet, considering all the news related to that, but we're going to go in depth about team movement in the NFL, and we have many different angles to approach that particular story. Please, if you're listening to the show right now and you've just found us, thank you very much. Don't forget to subscribe to our show on the platform that you found us on, whether it be iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, AHA Radio, or elsewhere, because we'd love to see you again back on Sunday when we do another show, or next Thursday when we have another show. We go straight through the year. We never take a break. That's a lie. We take a week off after the Super Bowl, but that's it. That's the only time we take a break. Otherwise, we move ahead, and the Superfan Super Mock Draft is coming very, very soon. Speaking of the superfans, let me introduce to you the group of superfans that are here with me this week. And we will start with our one Thursday regular, and that is the man in Prison Zone 6, our Dallas Cowboys superfan, Kevin. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Pod. Hello, everyone. Glad to be back. I actually missed last week, unfortunately, but pleasure to be here.
You may have missed last week, but of all the superfans listed here, you have the most Thursday seniority.
Yeah, I'm a dedicated man. What can I say?
There you go. Another guy who joins us frequently on Thursdays is the buddy who brought you into this podcast. He's in Prison Zone 1. That is Andy, our Miami Dolphins superfan.
Hello, Pod. Hello, Kevin. Hello, everybody. It's a lovely Thursday in New York City. The weather's heating up just a little bit. And, you know, as far as my Dolphins, all quiet on the Western Front. But as far as relocation is concerned, there's, you know, definitely some things that I have to chime in about with regards to the Rams last year and, of course, the Raiders and whatever it is going to be 2019.
If I'm going to stick with the seniority card, not quite sure which way I want to go, because I believe the most senior of superfans here with us is Jared, our Rams superfan. Now, Jared, you are in the greater California area, if I'm not mistaken, so I believe the Rams moved closer to you.
Yes, that is correct. I live up in Northern California by Sacramento, but I'm actually driving to Los Angeles right now, so I've got the state of California covered.
There you go. And then one of our big contributors, he's written a couple of blog posts for us. If you're into diving into real deep statistical numbers, James, our Houston Texans superfan, is the man for you.
Yeah, I don't know why Jared's trying to drive down for LA Rams tickets so soon. It's not like they sold out last year.
Hey, we did that one preseason game.
last but certainly not least, and he's last because the name that's on my computer screen is different than the name that I know him by. That is Ryan, our Jacksonville Jaguars superfan. Hello, Ryan.
What is happening, boys? Glad to be on, and obviously have a little bit of insight in terms of my hometown, which is Las Vegas, Nevada.
All right. We want to hear from you. Plus, if you want to be a super fan, we have a few openings. You can send us an email, nextfanup@gmail.com. You can tweet us at NFU Podcast. Those are the two best ways to reach us. And of course, if you wanted to go and check out James' blog post that I mentioned, nextfanup.wordpress.com is our website address at the present time. Let's get right into it. As we mentioned right off the top, the Raiders have moved, or at least they were approved to move during the owners' meetings this past week, and they're moving to Las Vegas. And if we're going to talk about the Raiders, might as well start with our Raiders superfan, Monty, who's also joined by one of our other superfans to talk about movement of teams. Here we go. So to react to the Las Vegas Raiders of Oakland, of course, we bring in our Raiders superfan, Monty. Hello, Monty.
How's it going, Pod? Sad day. Sad day.
Well, I'm going to get to that with you in just a second. But also joining us is a team that moved earlier this year, and that is the Los Angeles Chargers of San Diego. Hello, Ken.
Hello. I'm finally got a clear head enough to discuss this on the show.
What is it about the AFC West? Apparently, nobody likes their current location. So, Monty, you mentioned it's a sad day, but I'm curious because you've mentioned before, and you're also one of the super fans that doesn't actually reside in the actual location of the team. So why is it so sad for you today?
Sad day for the fans. This is the show for the fans, by the fans. And if you're a fan of a professional team and they leave your town, that's a sad day, man. Raider Nation is not beholden to one location. There's people who love the Raiders from all over the world. And you're right, it doesn't necessarily affect me directly, but it's sad. It happened to Oakland back in the 80s, and for it to happen to Oakland a second time, that's just sad. It's sad for the fans.
The vote was 31-1 to approve the move to Las Vegas. The only team that dissented were the Miami Dolphins. And the reason why Stephen Ross had voted in dissent is this, which was posted from Miami Herald's Adam Beasley, saying, Ross, quote, "My position today was that we as owners and as a league owe it to the fans to do everything we can to stay in the communities that have supported us until all options have been exhausted. I want to wish Mark Davis and the Raiders organization the best in Las Vegas." Now, it doesn't mention, this is odd that Stephen Ross is saying that the Raiders didn't exhaust all options to stay in Oakland, because it does appear that this has been a process that's been more than 2 years in the making here, Monty.
I mean, to be honest, Oakland has been trying to work out a new stadium deal since they originally went to Los Angeles. I mean, I understand it from Mark Davis's point of view. He is not the kind of billionaire like some of these guys who've got a huge portfolio of assets, and this NFL team is one of them, where they can just put $1 billion into a new stadium in Los Angeles. The Raiders are kind of the only asset that he has, and I think the city of Oakland did, they offered up a fair amount of money. They were going to put in $300 million for infrastructure, which is about all any city or municipality should be held accountable for. I mean, for Vegas to put up $750 to $1 billion of free money, it's just difficult for this cartel of billionaires to turn that down. So for Goodell to get up there and say he feels bad for the people of Oakland, he doesn't feel that bad because he's taking the money from Las Vegas and everyone's going to get a nice little relocation fee for quote unquote allowing the Raiders to go to Vegas. So I don't know. It's just all kind of crap where these billionaires hold cities for ransom to get free money to build a new stadium. The NFL could easily put together some money from all these guys, throw it in a mutual fund, and every 32 years there'd be enough money in there to redo people's stadiums. But instead, they just threatened to move to another city. And Las Vegas was the latest and greatest to say, come to our town, we'll give you a $1.7 billion stadium. So why wouldn't the NFL take that?
Yeah, the I mean, Oakland Stadium is the oldest in the league, built in 1966, or opened in 1966, I should say. So the high-end revenue streams aren't available. Before we talk a little bit more about the Raiders and some of the key parts of this move, let's bring in now Ken of those Los Angeles Chargers. Ken, you are a fan that resides in, or at least resided in, the town that your team was in. What is the state of San Diego these days?
Well, you know, you just look at the owners and the greed, and I really had, you know, the rug pulled from under me in terms of knowing that it's really just about money. And so when I see a football as family commercial now, I just turn it off or I change the channel. It's a bunch of bull crap. It's garbage. I get why the move had to happen for Dean Spanos, but I think it was stupid. I think that he made himself look like an ass. I think that I will never give another dime to the NFL in my lifetime ever again. If I want to buy a jersey, I'm going to get it from China. A part of me died that day when the Chargers left, because that was my, you know, that was my team. That was my, I really cared about them. They represented, you know, part of me. I was born and raised in San Diego. I've been here my entire life. So to see them move, especially to LA, like, I don't think a lot of people know this, but San Diego hates LA because LA is overcrowded, it's more expensive. People just don't seem as genuine out there. I mean, these are just like the things that come to my mind. So, but in terms of, am I still going to watch them? Yeah, heck yeah, I'm still going to watch them. I'm not going to give up on Philip Rivers. But, you know, if they win the Super Bowl next year, I'm not going to watch the parade if it's in LA. I'm not doing it. Like, that would be hurtful for me. So it just sucks. It definitely killed part of the NFL. Like, I'm still going to get excited next year at the beginning of it, but I got to be honest, like, I care much more about college basketball now in San Diego State, or, you know, I've been a Lakers fan for my whole life. And that's different because that was the closest team to me when I was growing up. And it was, you know, they were popular, they're good. So I became a fan early on. But if I was a Clippers fan when the Clippers were in San Diego and then they moved to LA, I wouldn't be interested in the NBA either.
Yeah. And the Lakers, also a team that had moved from Minnesota originally. So San Diego, the Chargers have decided that they're going to play in a smaller stadium for the next couple of years as the multi-billion dollar stadium is built in Los Angeles. And so they're going to take a hit in terms of revenues in the short term. Monty, your team is planning on playing the next two seasons in Oakland before they move on to Las Vegas. Now, what I didn't remember as I was reading another article about this, the Houston Oilers, when they moved to Tennessee, also planned on playing their last 2 years in Houston before they moved on to Nashville. However, they only ended up in one season because the Astrodome was empty. And then they moved to Memphis for a season. So, you know, a similar situation may occur here with the Raiders. What are your thoughts there, Monty?
Well, I think that the fans are going to still go to the game. The Raiders are a good team. They're going to win. The part that I think the Raiders are on a year-to-year lease with the Athletics baseball field where they've been playing at the last few years. So, I mean, would you be shocked if all of a sudden Oakland jacked up that price for them to stay for none? I mean, they'll only play there as long as, you know, it makes sense economically. So I think that the Raiders, if they play there next year, those eight home games, you're going to see a lot of, you know, awesome fans with some signs up in the stands about how Vegas sucks and, you know, more power to them. But I'd like to see at least one more home game in Oakland for that fan base. You know, even if I wasn't the Raiders super fan, it just sucks when teams move. Like, speaking of the NBA, when the Seattle Supersonics moved to Oklahoma City and then all of a sudden Kevin Durant turned that franchise around and they've been in the playoffs ever since. That sucks, man. Like, that sucks just as a fan of sport. And for the Raiders to appear to have finally righted the ship and be competitive and start being in the playoff conversation, it just sucks that they're going to, the awesome fan of Oakland that have put up with the last 13 years of losing aren't going to be able to witness it in person unless they buy a ticket to go to that desert city that, yeah.
So, Ken, are you going to take a trip? You mentioned you're still going to watch the team, but you don't plan on paying the NFL any more of your hard-earned money. But will you take a trip to Los Angeles to watch the team?
Hell no. Hell no. No way. I feel bad enough about giving them commercial revenue from just watching commercials on TV. I think next year might be the first year that I don't get the NFL Sunday ticket.
Well, that was going to be also the next question. I mean, is San Diego part of the local Los Angeles market? I mean, what teams do you suspect you're going to get on your local television?
I'd be shocked if we didn't get the Chargers because there are still so many fans. And at the end of the day, people can cry and say they're not going to watch them, but we love Rivers and, you know, we got a new coach. Joey Bosa is an exciting player. You like the NFL. You're not, I mean, some people are switching teams altogether. I was a big proponent of whatever team came to San Diego, whether it was the Raiders, you know, my least favorite team in the whole world, the Raiders, I would have supported them full force. I would have gotten rid of all, you know, I would have put all my Chargers gear into like some sort of storage vintage area, you know, as a remnant of my childhood. But I would have backed financially as hard as I possibly could have any team that was in San Diego so I could give the middle finger to the NFL for moving my team away.
You're still welcome to support the Raiders, Ken. That is a middle finger to San Diego, the Chargers, and get some Vegas gear. Middle fingers up. I love it. I love it.
We can't go there yet. We still have Rivers. Rivers is still in the division.
You know, Mark Davis has said that the quote, the Raiders were born in Oakland and Oakland will always be part of our DNA. We know that some fans will be disappointed and even angry, but we hope that they do not direct that frustration to the players, coaches, and staff. To that note, Derek Carr tweeted out, as I sit here and see a vote that takes the Raiders to Las Vegas, I'm overwhelmed with emotion. I don't know how we should feel. I feel the pain of our fans in Oakland. I also see the joy on the faces of our new fans in Las Vegas. As players, we will show up and give everything we have. We will compete, and we will do our best to bring a championship to the entire Raider Nation. He goes on with a few more things, and that sort of echoes what Brandon Jackson said on this podcast a couple weeks ago about the impending move to Las Vegas. But yeah, Monty, I guess I'll leave it to you for final thoughts here.
The biggest part about Vegas that I think is kind of a bummer. So the Raiders still actually have their, you know, their training camp up in Napa. So I think that Northern California people are still going to go up there and still support the Raiders, at least people that love the team. But Las Vegas is kind of a transient town, you know, like people aren't necessarily born and raised and stay in Vegas forever. People kind of migrate there. So I think there's going to be a strong contingent of NFL fans who are like, hey, I love the Green Bay Packers. I think I'm going to fly down to Vegas this weekend to catch an NFL game. So that home field advantage of, you know, having the stands blacked out with the black hole, it's never going to be the same, and it's going to kind of be a bummer. I'm sure Vegas is going to, you know, do something to try to make it feel like the black hole and all that kind of stuff. But for old timers like me, it'll always be a little bit hollow. I'm going to be the kind of guy who's like, hey, it's, you know, December here. I'm going to book a flight down to Vegas and have a weekend of debauchery, just like, you know, so many other fans will, but it's just not the same, man. The Raiders are Oakland Raiders. Even when they're in Los Angeles, it was still kind of, you know, just not the same. So it'll never be the same, but I love my team. So whether it's Vegas or San Antonio or even San Diego, I'd go fly down to San Diego, drink a couple beers with Ken, and middle fingers to the Spanos. I could do that. You know, wherever they are, I'm Raider Nation. I'm with it.
All right, Ken, what are your final thoughts here on team relocation?
Team relocation is dumb and I hate it. But, you know, the one thing I will say about the Raiders move to Las Vegas, and it's totally different than the Chargers moving to L.A. because, it actually makes sense. The Raiders are going to be the stars of the show in Vegas. I think it's going to be the hottest ticket to come by. You know, it, like the black hole, I mean, that just makes sense in Vegas. It makes sense to me. I think, like, it's going to be kind of cool that the Raiders are going to be in Vegas. And when you compare that to the Chargers, like, the Rams aren't even super popular in L.A. Like, USC, UCLA, I could go down, like, seven teams that are going to be more popular than Chargers, and it's just sad. And it makes, like, this, the Raiders move to Las Vegas makes the Chargers move to L.A. look so much worse.
Come to the dark side, Ken. Come to the dark side.
Jeez. Maybe when Rivers retires, honestly. Honestly, when Rivers retires, I might become a Raiders fan.
And I know Ken said that this move made Spanos look like a jackass. I think Mark Davis hasn't had to worry about that because his haircut really kind of does the job for him. So he's just doing what his old man has been fighting his whole life for, and I get the move financially too.
Well, and I got to say, I agree with both of you guys. I think the move makes the Raiders an event, which is something that the NFL has been desperately trying to manipulate. But now they actually have it. I think you're going to see all those away teams put together Vegas packages for their fan clubs so that teams can travel to Vegas. And you know, Vegas still is the quote unquote, you know, tourism capital of the world. So that I think that's going to be put to the test. And I think the Raiders become a huge event in Vegas, and monetarily, it absolutely makes sense. There's going to be billions and billions of dollars spent and earned by this organization. Now, I guess the next step will be seeing if the NFL can somehow manipulate some other event team somewhere else, whether that's in England or elsewhere. All right, guys, thanks for talking with us about the relocations of your teams. And until they make big boy moves, much like the Los Angeles Rams, until the Chargers make a big boy move, they will be the Los Angeles Chargers of San Diego. And Monty, I mean, honestly, I don't know when they're planning on changing their name to the Las Vegas Raiders, but they will be the Las Vegas Raiders of Oakland until they make a big boy move. Wouldn't it be surprising if the Raiders were able to win a Super Bowl next season while still in Oakland?
It wouldn't be surprising to me, Pod. I think the Raiders are the team to beat in the AFC.
Well, of course you would think that. But we can all dream, can't we? We can all dream. All right, guys. Thanks.
Peace out.
All right, so a lot to digest there as we talked with Ken, our Chargers superfan, and Monty, our Raiders superfan. And I sort of touched on it a little bit there when I was talking with the two of them. And I don't know if Andy's going to go in this direction or even Ryan. But the Raiders have just become event football. And by that, I mean every single team that's going to visit the Raiders in Las Vegas will have packages put together both for their season ticket holders and their regular ticket holders to bring fans to Las Vegas, the tourism capital of the world. And then, of course, there's the Raiders themselves, who are a globally recognized franchise. If there was going to be any team, I would say maybe only the Cowboys would have been able to pull off this type of move to Las Vegas and sort of bring this sort of event football, because every Sunday is now going to be an event in Las Vegas. And so let's see, I'm going to start with you, Ryan, because you mentioned that Las Vegas is your hometown. What do you think of that theory that I've just proposed there?
I think that's pretty accurate. If you look at like the most popular teams in the NFL, they're probably the only one on the top of the list that moved before even this time. So I can see that happening, and for sure it's going to be an event and people are going to want to come to Vegas for many reasons, and put an NFL game on there, that'll be another one. So I feel like it'll work out. And I just, it's a strange time, because I can tell you with 100% certainty that I thought in my entire lifetime that Las Vegas would never get a professional sports franchise, because I've been teased since I was a kid about the Oakland A's and the whoever else, maybe even the Blue Jays. I don't know, just a bunch of professional sports franchises that were always supposedly coming to Las Vegas or close, and we were just kind of used as leveraging for other cities to keep their team or even to move elsewhere, and it just never seemed like a reality. And now Las Vegas has two teams. I don't know how aware everyone is of the Vegas Golden Knights, but that is an NHL team, and that's going to start this coming season once the current season concludes. Vegas Golden Knights, baby. They're starting up, so that'll be my hockey team because I don't have one. And now we're going to have two professional franchises. And, you know, it certainly seems like they cleared some kind of hurdle in terms of gambling. I don't know if everyone's aware, but gambling goes on in Las Vegas. The NFL hasn't been okay with gambling, and now there's going to be a team there. I just say it's a strange time because I'm still kind of in shock that we're getting a team, and I'm happy for the city. Very disappointed for Oakland fans. I know some people talk about about their fans because of some stadium stuff and everything. I don't know. Bottom line to me is it sucks, but I'm excited to have a team where I live. It's never happened for me before.
Do we have to worry that you're going to become Raider fan 1B to Monty's 1A?
No, not at all. This is another reason why I really wanted to be on this podcast. I know it's been a while, because just to talk about fandom with maybe everybody, and I don't know how it started, but with everyone else and their teams. But I mean, nothing is going to take over the Jaguars for me. They are my team. I don't care where they live. I've gone to Jacksonville as much as I can. They're the team that I love, and they're always going to be the team I follow. It's going to be interesting with the team in town, because I suppose I will sort of root for them by default when it comes to, games that I have no preference over. If it's, Raiders versus whoever, the Lions or somebody, whatever it is, then sure, go Las Vegas. It'll be kind of a second team, but I hope to go to some games. Of course, if the Jaguars play in Las Vegas, which I can't even fathom in my brain right now, I definitely will be going to that game. And of course, we are not sure exactly what year the Raiders will play in Vegas first, because 2019 sounded like the idea, but it's possible after this season the Raiders will kind of be up in the air. So I don't know, but once it happens, I will go. But Monty is safe. He can still be the Raiders fan. I'll just still root for Vegas.
So many different directions to go in, because you brought up a point that I know James wants to talk about, and Jared, I definitely want to get to you too. But Andy, you had mentioned that you have some pretty strong opinions about this movement going on right now in the NFL.
I think it's unfortunate for Oakland, definitely. But more than anything, I think it's a referendum on, in this day and age, you just can't be a blue collar, for lack of a better term, owner. You just can't own a football team if your net worth is under like $3 or $4 billion. And the reason for that is, listen, if it's time to build a stadium, if it's time to update your archaic facilities in which you play, which was the case of the Oakland Alameda Coliseum, you need to pony up. You need to pay out of pocket. You guys probably remember that last week it was a 31-1 vote, and the one vote was Mr. Stephen Ross, who owns my beloved Miami Dolphins. And I'm siding with Ross here, not because I'm a Dolphins fan, and anyone who's talked Dolphins with me certainly knows that I am not a Stephen Ross guy for the most part, but I agree with Rossi here. I mean, listen, if you're an owner, you need to be able to pay out of pocket. You can't expect taxpayers have tons of other, they're trying to get their kids to college. They have a million other things to worry about that don't involve professional football. Not everyone, I know it's hard for us to realize that on this podcast, but not everyone likes football. Weird, I know.
What?
So, I know, right? Weird. Not everyone loves this violent, barbaric, misogynistic, capitalistic, imperial game, tyrannical game that we love so much in America. Not everyone loves it. Tough. I know it's crazy. But listen, if you're an owner, you need to pony up for a new stadium. Mark Davis didn't. He couldn't. He's just not worth enough money to.
So that's kind of how I feel about the whole situation. It sucks for Oakland, but it needed to be done. Now, I would have preferred, and I said this not last podcast, but two podcasts ago, I certainly would have preferred to see the Raiders move to Mexico City or to San Antonio or to one of those either Mexican or Tex-Mex types places, because a lot of Mexican-Americans are Raider fans, and I think there's a huge market for it down there. But, hey, Las Vegas, we'll see what happens.
Jared, I'm going to move on to you because you have a team that was based in St. Louis and actually was based in Los Angeles, moved to St. Louis and has now moved back to Los Angeles. What are your feelings here? I mean, obviously, you personally, the team moved closer to you, which was in your best interest. But how do you think about this on a macro level?
Well, for the Raiders, I feel really bad for their fans. I live up about an hour from Oakland, and I have a lot of close friends who are Raiders fans, and they're really upset with the move. And I try to just tell them, you know, just don't like the ownership, but the coaches and the players had nothing to do with it. And you can still follow the fans, the team online and watch it. I just tell them, you know, keeping fans of the team, even though it stinks that you're not going to be able to watch it locally. And I don't know how it's going to work those next 1 to 3 years when Oakland, I mean, the one saving grace is the Raiders are really good, probably the two or three best teams in the AFC next year. So I feel bad for those fans. They were horrible for 12 years, and then they're finally good, and now they're moving. But it's complicated. I mean, the Raiders share with the A's, and the A's kind of control the lease of that stadium, so the Raiders really couldn't do much. Like mentioned earlier, Mark Davis doesn't have enough money like Stan Kroenke to build a stadium, so he made the smart business decision to move to Las Vegas. I mean, what owner is going to turn down $750 million? I mean, he could have maybe partnered with a Bay Area billionaire like Mark Zuckerberg or some of those other guys and have them help pay for it and keep him in Oakland, which I think would have been best. Or, you know, share a stadium with the 49ers. There's two home locker rooms in the 49ers stadium. It's only 3 years old. But I think his dad just didn't want to have anything to do with the 49ers, and the feeling's kind of mutual. So I feel worse for the fans, but I would just say to any Raiders fan, you know, you can follow them and just don't like the ownership, but still root for the players.
All right, James, you're in Houston, a team that lost a franchise but then regained a new one.
Yeah, and I mean, we've hit on a lot of points already. I mean, I just want to bring it back to, you said that this is going to be an entertainment thing. I mean, let's see, Vegas is good for entertainment. Vegas already has appointment viewing on Sundays for football. It's in all of the sports books. And in fact, it's going to be a lot better experience sitting in a sports book than sitting in a stadium, when the majority of people in Vegas that are going to go to Vegas on these trips are going to go to Vegas to gamble. And the NFL is not going to allow gambling at this stadium, at least initially, maybe eventually, in which case, man, that would be awesome. Rip out a row of seats, just put slot machines in front of people with little video monitors so they can watch the game while still playing slots. That's the future. As far as Houston and what Oakland is about to go through, the stadium is not going to be ready until the 2020 season at the earliest. So that's three additional seasons that Oakland is going to have to play somewhere. They have a year-to-year lease with O.co Coliseum. They were very unhappy with that lease last year because the city of Oakland raised their rent like anybody who would be on a month to month or a season to season rate. And so the current plan by Mark Davis is to play the next two seasons in Oakland, and then question mark. There's a couple of options for him there. They can go to like UNLV stadium there. There's actually been talk of sharing the space in San Francisco for a season, going to San Antonio for a season, lots of options, and then playing his inaugural season in 2020. When the Houston Oilers moved out of the Astrodome, they had 2 years left on the lease in Houston. Then they had a third season elsewhere before their Nashville stadium was finally going to be open. The first year, that first lame duck year, they only had two games that went above 50,000 in attendance. And that was because a lot of the tickets had already been sold. So, you know, we're already at a point where season ticket holders have been billed. So you're going to have a lot of sold tickets, but not necessarily a lot of people in the stands. The second lame duck year that they played in Houston, I mean, they had games that was down in, you know, 12 to 15,000, I believe, was where it bottomed out as far as attendance for a particular game. NFL owners are not going to go for that. They will not like to see on TV, you know, especially if Oakland ends up being a very good franchise over the next couple of years. They're not going to want to tolerate one of their premier teams with only 20,000 people in the stands. After the second lame duck year, Bud Adams got sick of that. And so instead of negotiating with the city of Houston to either play at like Rice University or somewhere else, realizing that the fans had finally had enough of him, he went up to Memphis and they sold out in Memphis for a year. So if Mark Davis really wanted to cash in on this, I'm kind of surprised that over the next 3 years, while his stadium in Las Vegas is being built, he isn't kind of going to the highest bidder. Like, why don't we just go full capitalism on this? Mark Davis could go to the city of San Antonio and say, why don't you pay me to fill your stadium for a season and you guys can have NFL football for a season. Just be that great traveling team. So it'll end up working out for the Raiders probably in Las Vegas. They claim that this stadium is going to be a $2 billion stadium that requires $750 million in taxpayer funding. Although now they've already said that estimate is probably $200 million high. Of course, instead of refunding some of the taxpayer money, the NFL is just going to be able to either pocket that money or Mark Davis is going to pocket or not have to spend that $200 million. So that's just great marketing by the NFL on their part.
Hey, listen, anyone that watches HGTV like all the time like I do knows that you're going to need a little extra in the budget to make sure that any of those unforeseen circumstances are taken care of. And $200 million will go a long way. All right, Kevin, you are the only super fan that we haven't heard of. And for some reason, I had in my head that at one point or another, when Jerry Jones took over the franchise, that he considered maybe not all out moving the team to Oklahoma when he was looking for a new stadium deal. I'm probably wrong on that. I can't seem to find anything that backs that thought up, but maybe you have more ideas about that. I am seeing where he apparently played the Cotton Bowl against other interests to get the current Cowboys stadium done.
To be honest with you, Pod, I haven't really heard much about that. So I don't really have much to say about that and moving to Oklahoma. But honestly, about the speaking of Jerry Jones, though, he is sort of a low-key, a big winner for this move to Vegas, and I'll tell you why. Along with the Steinbrenners own a marketing company called Legends. It's a hospitality marketing company, and they're going to sell the suites and sponsorship for the Las Vegas stadium. So Jerry is about to make hundreds of million more dollars. So the rich get richer, and Jerry was actually on the forefront and one of the puppet masters to move the Raiders from Oakland to Las Vegas. So that's all I have to say about Jerry. Don't know much about his Oklahoma relationship, but more on the Raiders. I honestly don't really feel bad for the Raiders. I mean, I feel bad for their season ticket holders. That's about it. Because they're still going to be able to they're still going to have all the televised games. They're still going to be able to, in this day and age, there's no problem following your team. You can watch it anywhere. You can read anywhere and all that stuff. But for the NFL, I don't think it's a particularly smart move, honestly, for them to move to Las Vegas, because the Bay Area is either the fifth or sixth biggest sports market in the country, and Vegas is not that. It's in the bottom five, and there's only 758,000 TV household TVs according to Nielsen. So if the NFL was concerned about TV ratings last year, it's probably going to go down this year because there's simply not as many people in Las Vegas as there is in the Bay Area to get those ratings up. On the other moves for the Chargers, I've been wanting to say this for a while. I simply have no sympathy whatsoever for the San Diego Chargers moving to L.A. One, because it's literally an hour and a half drive up the road. Two, the San Diego Chargers had ample opportunity to keep them in San Diego. They just seemingly didn't care about their team until it was too late. And those are the biggest reasons. So honestly, that move really, it's Chargers fans, cry me a river. And another thing about Las Vegas, similar to San Diego and Miami, the Southern Florida teams in general, there's so many other things to do there. Attendance is always wishy-washy. It's never as much as the NFL would like. And in Vegas, as everyone knows, there's a million things to do, whether it be casinos, family-friendly things, and then there's definitely not family-friendly things to do in Vegas. So it's definitely going to be not the main attraction in Vegas, which I don't think the NFL should be happy about. So I think overall, in the next 5 years, the NFL is going to realize that Las Vegas is not a good spot for the Raiders.
Kevin, I'm glad you brought up the thing about how there's a ton of other things to do in Miami. Because the Brookings Institute actually came out with something way back in the late 90s, and it was reconfirmed a couple times in different studies. And it's basically you have X number of dollars that go to entertainment, right? And that's nationwide. And so if you introduce a new entertainment thing, it's not that entertainment money suddenly grows. It just gets redistributed from that existing pool of entertainment money. And so, you know, you're going to spend, you know, whatever it's going to be, the tourism industry in Vegas, let's call it, you know, $1 billion, even though it's way more than that. You know, this NFL team, yeah, it's way more than that, but just because math is easy with round numbers. this NFL team coming in, it's not going to add like 10% to that or 20% to that or even 1% to that. All it's going to do is it's going to take that existing pool and reshuffle it around. And if there's not a quality product on the field, you're going to have the exact same thing that happened in Los Angeles this past year with the Rams. There's too many other things to do to go watch something bad.
Yeah, see, that's where I disagree, though, if I may jump in, where I think the economics of this move doesn't come so much from the Raiders as much as it comes from every visiting team. That's where I believe the increase in terms of the economics will arise. Think about all the different if you're I'll just use me as an example. As a Patriots fan, am I going to take a trip out to Oakland to go see the Patriots on the road against the Raiders? No, there's nothing in Oakland for me to that's going to make me want to go there. Now, as a Patriots fan, it's already been joked about in our Slack group. As a Patriots fan, am I going to go down to Vegas where not only can I, you know, partake in many of the other entertainment options, most likely gambling, to enjoy while I'm in the city of Las Vegas, and then the actual football game, but also conferences that end up happening in Vegas all the time. I believe it's still the conference capital of the world. And if it's not, it's right up there with some of the other big cities that hold conferences on a regular basis. You know, to me, I see the visiting teams being having the economic impact to the Las Vegas local economy more so than the actual Raiders. Because I agree with you that if you just bring in the Raiders, now you're diluting the budget for entertainment. Whereas you bring in other teams that are not located in the city of Vegas, that's where I think you're going to increase the budget. And Andy, I want to bring this point up with you because I did see a couple of players on the NFL Network talk about this, like, okay, well, now we know, I mentioned that entertainment factor in Las Vegas, and it's not just so much the gambling, but all the other things that young men, young impressionable men who have a lot of money could get themselves into a lot of trouble in Vegas. And Miami was a city that was brought up as sort of you know, the Strip is also a similar place where young men with a lot of money can get themselves in trouble. Oh, we could just look at the New York Giants going on a boat in Miami before a big playoff game. So talk a little bit about that aspect of this move to Vegas.
There's boats in Minnesota, I mean, too, Pod.
LOL, there's a lot of reasons Stephen Ross voted against it. One is obviously he was fundamentally opposed to, you know, taxpayers paying for stadiums. Another one is he doesn't want Vegas is a warm weather, very flashy, transient city, just like Miami. He doesn't want another Miami. He doesn't want a Miami West in the NFL. What would he want that? There's already LA. I mean, even the Rams are terrible. I think one thing, and I'm glad you mentioned being a Patriots fan, potentially going to Vegas to watch an away pass game. One thing that could be a huge, huge problem for the Raiders if Carr, like, regresses hard and he doesn't pan out ultimately. I mean, he probably will. But if the Raiders just get bad for a prolonged period of time, it's going to be really bad. Because Las Vegas, there's going to be so many tourists, so many opposing fans, so many people are going to circle the Vegas game on their calendar and save up thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to go. You know, I could, if the Raiders ever get 4-12, perennial 4-12 bad again, like they were not that long ago, I could see their home games being 65% away team.
But still sold out. And I think that's a key.
Sure. Still sold out, but that's not good.
Not for the team. No, obviously.
But that's not good for the NFL, though, I would argue. I don't think that's good for the NFL.
If the stadium remained sold out, it's awesome for the NFL. Just look at Cleveland.
Yeah, but from a long-term competitive balance perspective, I don't think that's good for the NFL. It's kind of similarly to how tanking ultimately isn't good for the NBA. You need to have, in order for a league to function, I really think you need to have the home team really care about the home team and it to be that type of environment for the game to take place, especially in football, where it isn't a 7-game series like it is in other sports.
I'd like to spin this positive for a second, boys, because I'm no economy expert. And I was going to bring up the point, Pod, about the away fans wanting to travel to Las Vegas, but let's look at all the little Ryan Merciers who will be born this year. They're going to have a football team in their hometown, baby. And they're going to be rooting for Las Vegas. Maybe they build up a fan base. But and then, you know, all the kids in Las Vegas who attached to the Jacksonville Jaguars like I did. Honestly, I'm trying to think of, like, the fan base that stands out at home. And I don't think there is one. So maybe that's bad for the Raiders, but I'm actually wondering if there's more Buffalo Bill fans in Las Vegas. There seem to be a lot for whatever reason, and it's all spread out. But you might start getting, you know, you always got to sink into the kids early, like the tobacco industry or something.
You're from Vegas, so what percentage of working adults between 20 and 60 who were born and raised in Vegas, do you think ultimately stay in Vegas? And I guess what I'm asking is, what percentage of, like, adults with disposable income to spend on entertainment who are born and raised in Vegas, do they stay there, though? You know what I mean?
You raise an excellent point. I wanted to be positive just for, like, a minute. I feel like that's probably a low percentage.
Well, I'll be positive. The other economic impact that Vegas is about to experience is it's another Super Bowl destination, which takes away from Miami and Dallas. What's that?
That costs cities money, and they're only going to get it once every, 6 or 7 years? You look at Jerry World. That was going to be the place for Super Bowls for perpetuity after he built that. And now he gets it, once every 7 years? The same thing's going to happen with Kroenke's Palace in Los Angeles. The same thing's going to happen with Las Vegas. They're going to be promised that, oh, yeah, you're going to get so many Super Bowls. We're just going to do a rotation of, like, 5 cities. And that's not going to come to fruition, which is actually a good thing because you look at how, like, the city of San Francisco, it ended up costing them money to host the Super Bowl 2 years ago.
Yeah, but, James, to that point, you're going to see cities like Jacksonville, it gets weeded out. I mean, already basically has. Your town,
Sean Khan's working on that.
Your town's going to get weeded out. I don't think Houston's going to end up hosting a Super Bowl all that more frequently. New Orleans, the Superdome is a dilapidated place. That's sort of an underreported story about how old the Superdome is at this particular point.
Is it really?
Yeah. New Orleans is going to need a new home pretty soon because of all these other new stadiums with all the amenities that the new stadiums bring.
But they also added Kansas City to the rotation once they got the taste of a cold Super Bowl up in New York and finding out that it really wasn't that bad. So, yeah, you're going to say that these cities are going to contract. Sure, we can lose Miami and Jacksonville and Houston. But
no,
I mean, if we're just going to play devil's advocate here, but sure. Then we're going to add cities like Kansas City is going to get one. And then the NFL is going to say, well, you know, we gave Kansas City a big storied franchise with a history of success. And it didn't work out so badly. Let's look at giving Green Bay one, you know, and they're going to,
by the way, that's not going to happen. When is Kansas City's not even on the docket for a Super
Bowl. I would be
in
support of that.
I think also
really the infrastructure to accommodate it, but I would be in support of that.
In regards to the New York Super Bowl, though, I think if the NFL thinks that it went super well and it will go well in the future for cold weather cities, they're making a huge mistake. I mean, it did go well in New York because it's New York City. Everything goes well there in the entertainment industry. But also they got very, very lucky that it was a 45-degree day in February. That's not going to happen every February 5th or February 3rd. It's just simply not. Like, in the second that there's 10 inches of snow in Kansas City or in Green Bay or in New York City, and that's the condition for the Super Bowl, is going to be a disaster.
But the NFL, look at Roger Goodell. He's not smart enough to realize that stuff like that falls on luck. He's probably saying, him and Jerry Jones are probably sitting there, see, you know, God wants us to do this in cold weather cities. He's blessing it with perfect weather. And if you want to talk about poor infrastructure, have you been to Vegas lately? Like, there's no infrastructure there. McCarran Airport is bad, and that's putting it generously. If you have to go off of the strip, you're taking a cab, you know, maybe, or an Uber. There's no good infrastructure in Las Vegas either.
Well, just something that I want to point out again about Vegas, and I know this is obvious, and I've said it, but if you literally just think about it, I'm guessing it sounds like most of you guys are in cities with sports franchises. Just again, think about Las Vegas has literally never had an NBA game, you know, like we get preseason games or you know, the MLB has never played a game in Las Vegas, and now the NHL is. So we're going to have actual professional games going on. So it's pretty unprecedented, and you almost don't know how a city will react to it. So I'm not guaranteeing success by any means, because the absolute best thing that we have is the UNLV Running Rebel basketball team. And let me tell you, when they get bad, if their season downturns, the people do not show up anymore. And unfortunately, I've been guilty of that just by being busy, actually. I still love the Rebels. But the main point I wanted to make here is Las Vegas is really great at making something shiny and new. And the moment it doesn't work, we implode it. So, you know, a casino gets too old, it's gone. Or, like, we get a residency from some singer, and you know, if Celine Dion stops selling tickets or whoever, you know, she's gone. She's out of here. So this is a thing that, you know, in this day and age, it's not 50 years ago. I feel like something can survive on that short period of time. And if we find out it doesn't work, I feel like a solution, you know, can happen relatively quick. And again, I'm just selfishly, 100% selfish. I'm just happy for the hometown. So you guys raise excellent points. I'm just pointing out some Vegas people are happy.
Last,
get the Las Vegas Outlaws though.
XFL baby, he hate me for life.
Last thing I want to say about teams moving. I had hoped to have a St. Louis fan on the show today, and unfortunately couldn't make the schedules work out to make that recording happen. But I can approach this topic as a Patriots fan, having grown up with the Patriots since 1984, but in between that really sucky period of the New England Patriot franchise and the really awesome period which we reside in now, the Patriots almost moved to St. Louis, which was a horrible time for me as a fan, and wondering where I was going to place my allegiances, because it was not going to remain with the Patriots if they had moved to St. Louis and become the Mustangs. I was ready to probably jump ship and go to Buffalo, I believe was where I was going to place my allegiances, because I wasn't going to root for the Giants, and I certainly wasn't going to root for the Jets. So Buffalo was the next closest place that I could sort of not say without throwing up in my mouth a little bit. But, you know, so for the fans that are in Oakland that grew up with the team in Oakland, you know, my heart does go out to you and to all of these places where teams have left, the heart goes out. And you got to wonder, is a team ever going to reappear in Oakland? I would guess not. I would think that the 49ers now own that market. So there would be no other reason to put another team in that particular area of the world. So unfortunately, if you're a Raiders fan and you live in Oakland, you're going to be rooting for the Las Vegas Raiders for at least the time being.
Real quick on that, Pod, I would say that the Raiders and 49ers hate each other and their fans hate each other. So I don't think any Raider fans are going to move over to the 49ers. And the only way that a team could move back to the Bay Area, I mean, there's 8 million people that live in the Bay Area, and there's tons of money in the Silicon Valley. So if an owner ponies up the money, they could maybe move. But I just don't see any other franchises moving unless there's, I don't know, unless it goes really bad in Buffalo or Jacksonville. Those are the only teams I think may have stadium issues. But yeah, there's plenty of money in the Bay Area. I just think the 49ers would block it because they want to own the market.
Well, and that's the thing. I think you have two problems with California as a state overall. We all know the economics of California, and getting taxpayer money to pay for a football stadium is probably the least priority for anything happening in California and California politics. But second, the 49ers are going to block any sort of attempt to move back into their particular area, whether they can convert any, forlorn Raiders fans or not. All right. Enough on moving teams. The next big item on the list that occurred from the owners' meetings was a couple of new rules will be put in place. Nothing, super exciting, although one super exciting play has been taken away, and that is teams will no longer be allowed to leap over the long snapper in attempt to block a field goal, which, by the way, the rule as it was before this wasn't really written in a manner that made for status quo when it came to calling a penalty or not. I remember, I believe it was a playoff game where Shea McClellan made the leap over a long snapper, and the refs ruled that he touched the long snapper on the way down when that wasn't even in the case. But it was what it was. What do we think of some of these rules changes? I will start with you, Andy.
I think the jumping over it's the Patriots play. Patriots love doing that. I think they do it the most.
The Seahawks probably did it more. There's another team that was not too thrilled. I think it was the Eagles, actually.
Well, I remember
the Eagles are the one who proposed that rule.
You're right. The Eagles were the ones.
Special teams defense in fantasy was really good, so probably the Eagles. Anyway, as far as the jumping over the kicker, I mean, obviously, I'm not in support of that. It makes the game more exciting. Is it really a player safety issue? Is it really? Think about the downside to going off sides. That's 5 yards. That can make a field goal a lot easier. It's not like it's a riskless play for the defense. It's not like it's a riskless, malicious you know, players say it's not like that. The defense doesn't want to jump offside, so I don't like the rule.
Was there a rule? There was another rule you had mentioned, Andy, that didn't get accepted, and that was if a ball on the kickoff were to go through the uprights instead of coming out to the 25, it would come to the 20. By the way, the 25-yard line touchback rule was extended for another year.
I think that's a really cool rule, to be honest. That'd be 5 yards is 5 yards. I mean, hey, I mean, listen, in this day and age with these offenses, in many, many football games, that 5 yards is just not going to mean anything. And teams are still going to elect to, you know, try to pop the kick up in the air to pin them at like the 8 or the 12. We see that happen sometimes. So I don't know if it's going to materially change the game a lot. It'll obviously depend on the type of kicker you have. But I think popping the kick up in the air is still going to very much be a thing this year and going forward.
Well, and to bring up player safety, you know, the whole reason why the kickoff was moved, the touchback was moved to the 25 from the 20 was because of player safety. They were hoping that there'd be less kickoff returns, and there were less kickoff returns last year due to previous years. But as you mentioned, especially my team, they like to pop that ball up and make the receiver catch it at about the 1 and then get tackled before they got to the 20. So they ended up losing out on those 5 yards. To me, I don't necessarily think this is having the intended consequence that the rule is supposed to put in place. And James, is 5 yards really 5 yards for football teams trying to score?
I mean, yeah, 5 yards is always going to equate to 5 yards, even in the metric system. But it goes back to like expected points, right? And so the average starting position of the offense this year moved forward about 3 yards, which is pretty significant. That's a little bit more than a quarter of a point expected per possession, which when you see the increase in scoring, last year, it was a little bit more than a quarter of a point. So other rule changes can get attributed to that, but about a quarter of the point last year or a quarter of a point per possession last year can be attributed to moving up the kickoff. As far as that leaping play, I know the NFLPA backed it as far as a player safety move. So they clearly saw some benefit. I think they saw the benefit of if the long snapper was able to jump up in time or, you know, just clip the guy who's jumping the line, they were more worried about the guy landing on his head and neck, just being upended. The rule that I really like, though, is all of the replays are going to go to a central authority. It's very similar to how Major League Baseball and the NHL do it. So I'm not super thrilled that Dean Blandino gets the ultimate call because I'm not a huge Dean Blandino fan, but he can designate people. So basically the ref is going to be handed an iPad, or I'm guessing it's going to actually be Microsoft Surface branded because they've paid the most money for that. And he's going to stare at this little tablet while the guys in New York talk about it. And then the guys in New York are going to tell him what to do and what to announce to the crowd. I don't think they've gone quite far enough with changes to replay. I would really like to see where the office in New York just basically said, look, there's this controversial play. Tell us what the ruling is without being told what the ruling on the field is. And then the office in New York would basically say, we can't definitively say what it is, in which case the ruling on the field would stand, or it's definitively, you know, this particular outcome. It just kind of gets rid of that confirmation bias. So if you're told that the ruling on the field was a touchdown, they're going to look just a little bit harder, maybe even subconsciously, to try and confirm that it is a touchdown in order to make the referees look a little bit better, or at least not as bad. And then the only other change I'd like to see to the current replay system is let's stop this frame by frame Zapruder film style review of every single replay. Like, you can't gain that much more information doing frame by frame analysis. Let's let them look at the replay either at real speed, maybe half speed. And if you can't figure it out from there, well, then, you know, it's not definitive. And so the ruling on the field should just stand.
How dare you? Because Julian Edelman caught that ball. And while the referee on the field got the call right, that's one of those calls that oftentimes we as fans go, oh my God, how in the world did they not rule that a catch? Or how in the world did they rule that a catch? Julio Jones had a couple of great catches in that game too, which frame by frame replay helped make sure the call was correct.
Dean Blandino does have a Twitter account, so I imagine this year his mentions will be pretty insufferable throughout the season, since he will be the ultimate decider in these plays. So that should be a lot of fun for him. I might advise just never looking at those. And as far as I just wanted to jump in about the leaping play. Let's just be not politically correct, and I'll just say it sucked. It was fun. I don't want them to take the fun thing away. I get the player safety thing, but as a fan, I'm just going to say I don't like it. I like seeing those block kicks. And also, as a hot take, I don't like the extra point moving back. I decided that was a bad idea. Doesn't make it any more exciting. What did make it exciting was possibly getting blocked, so maybe I'm in the minority on both, but bad job, NFL, bad job.
All right, Kevin, your turn.
First things first, I agree with James and I guess Ryan. Not a big fan of Dean Blandino. Quite frankly, he's a schmeeb. Anyway, the jumping over the center for the field goals, hugely opposed that rule. First of all, there was never any injuries in the last 2-3 years when people started doing it. So there. And it is a relatively safe play, if you ask me. Like, honestly, every play in the NFL, someone has the potential for being hurt. So you just want to just cancel the game if you just want to for player safety. It's honestly ridiculous. I'm not to say I'm not for player safety, but they've implemented so many rules for player safety that honestly it's gone a little bit over the line. I mean, the players know what they're getting into. It's a contact sport. Everyone's 250 pounds, less than 5% body fat. Like, what do you expect? And you're getting paid millions of dollars to do it. So,
and by the way, just to add on to that, new rule, the receiver running a pass route is now considered a defenseless player.
Yeah, so that's ridiculous also. It's probably going to cause even more excessive hitting or flagrant hitting penalties and holding penalties. It's just going to be horrible. And what else? So about the running over the jumping over the center rule, I think the NFL tried to sort of kick that under the rug by giving more leeway now to player celebrations on the field. Thanks a lot, NFL. Thanks a lot for that. I mean, they're honestly just every offseason they just take away more and more fun from the game, and it's getting a little infuriating. I mean, I was putting up with it for the last 3 years, but it's really getting on my nerves. And that's really all I have to say about that. But really, just Dean Blandino. I have some inappropriate words for you.
By the way, player celebrations was a rule that apparently has been tabled until the next owners' meeting, which is a little bit later on in the spring. Which should be interesting to see. The players actually wanted to give a little bit of input before the rule was put in place. And basically the rule was going to be, this type of celebration is considered okay. This type of celebration is considered illegal. Which again,
is ridiculous.
Yeah, you're talking about
celebrations. Grown men.
If you can't figure out if you can't figure out that when you run in the end zone and you put your hands up and you spike a ball is a reasonable celebration, but if you go in the end zone, you grab your crotch, you point at the other team, and you sort of make them feel bad about what you just did is sort of a crappy celebration, then, I mean, you got more problems than just playing football, my friend. I had a similar situation with youth football last year, playing in a flag football league, where I had a team full of 10-year-olds that were all about 2'5" playing against a team of 14-year-olds who have played football their entire life. We never had a chance in winning that game. But every kid on that other team, they'd throw a length of the field touchdown, and then they'd put their wings out and fly and weave in and out of every player on our team all the way down to the end zone to like celebrate with their buddy. And I was just like, are you serious? Like, that's not sportsmanship. No,
that's so, not sportsmanship.
So, like, that's sort of where I think, and that's difficult to write in a rule, but that's sort of what they need to get to.
Pod, honestly, I have no problem with exactly what you just said if it's professional athletes. 10-year-old kids, that's terrible, obviously. But these are professional athletes. It is entertainment. It is the Roman. It is the modern day Roman Coliseum. Anything goes. I am very free market when it comes to celebration and an individualism and charisma in every sport. Mm-hmm. I love hockey celebrations too. I don't know. I've always been pretty free markets about that kind of stuff, and I feel pretty strongly about that. 10-year-old kids is one thing. Professional athletes, anything goes.
I agree with Andy. Like, it might be just me and Andy, I guess, but I miss the days
of generational,
Chad Ochocinco, Golden Jacket Hall of Fame celebrations, Joe Horn cell phone celebrations,
but see, those celebrations are fine. See, but those celebrations are fine. They're funny. They're not directed at anyone. I think that's sort of the difference in perhaps the examples that we're pointing out. Like, I don't have a problem if Joe Horn decides to put or Chad Ochocinco puts the ball on the ground and grabs the pylon and decides he's going to play golf with the ball. That's funny. Like, I'm good with that. And he's not directing that at the other team. It's sort of like, it's sort of the other extreme where they, you know, where they're flying around players. Like, to me, that's fighting words. And now I'm going to punch you in the face. And if I do that twice, I'm going to get thrown out of the game for unsportsmanlike conduct fouls.
Yeah, Pod, I kind of think T.O. when he spiked the ball in the Star in Dallas, that's definitely crossing the line. But, I mean, I forget the guy, but someone in the Cowboys leveled him. So if you celebrate too much, then they should just let the other team level them. Yeah, so yeah, I'm all for celebrations, too. It's ridiculous. Just, if you do it in someone else's face, then, you know, it's fine if the other team levels them.
To go to the T.O. thing, as a Cowboys fan, at the time, I was like, I was pissed at T.O. I was like, I can't really say what I was thinking because it's a family show. But in hindsight, it's like, it was hilarious. It was hilarious. And I have no problem with it, to be honest with you.
Interesting. Yeah, very interesting. So we all come from a different perspective there. Any other rules that got passed or didn't get passed that anybody wants to bring up right now?
I'll talk about the overtime really quick. They were thinking about maybe cutting it to 10 minutes, and I don't know if that really going to help anything. It might lead to more ties, but I don't know. Maybe I'm out on a limb, but I kind of like the college overtime rules where you just give both teams the ball.
You're out on a limb there.
I like that just because there's less ties, and just say no extra points. If you score a touchdown, you have to go for two every time, and maybe push it back a little bit, like give it to him on the 40 or something, but just end the game. Like, we don't need these 15-minute overtimes with ties.
The game might literally never end, though.
Yeah, it's true. It might never end.
It would eventually end, but
It would eventually end, but you're asking NFL offenses in this day and age. Think about two really good quarterbacks having to execute on two-point conversion plays, which they'll be plenty capable of doing that with those little rub routes and whatever. God forbid you have a big target down there. Yeah. The games might go on forever, honestly, if we use college rules with these offenses and these quarterbacks.
I'm less concerned with the six overtimes where each team is trading touchdowns than having a revisit of that Arizona-Seattle game last year where they doinking field goals off the uprights. Like, if we get six overtimes because nobody has scored, that would be the end of the college overtime rule experiment.
You know what the end of the college overtime rule experiment is right now? Let's not even talk about it. Terrible.
Agreed.
You know what I don't have a problem with? More football. So if these NFL games keep going on in a 15-minute overtime, it's fine. And you know what else I don't like talking about these rule changes? Is the overtime rule when they changed it. Just go back to sudden death. I don't care. We didn't get a possession. Oh, boo-hoo. Who cares? The other team scored. It's over. It's over, baby. Football game's over.
I support that. Yeah, just first team to score wins.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ties are the worst. I was at the Rams 49er game when they tied about 4 or 5 years ago. It was horrible. Like, nobody wants a tie. That's like soccer. But not to offend our soccer fans, but yeah, just do something to eliminate, shorten the overtime, and make it a winner, no ties.
By the way, I had always thought that the preseason games, if the game ended in a tie, that was it. They didn't do overtime in preseason games, but apparently they do.
Oh,
which,
they do.
Which is pretty stupid. Like, that should be, you should eliminate overtime in preseason games. That's because who cares about the outcome of a preseason game? A couple of headlines here to wrap up the show. The Seattle Seahawks apparently have been taking pitches to acquire Richard Sherman, but Pete Carroll says a move is most likely unlikely.
That's because of that new rule where you have a defenseless receiver running a route. That's how Richard Sherman makes his money, man. Just let that receiver turn his head for a split second and boom, dirty hit.
Well, there were also a couple of incidences last year on the sideline where Richard Sherman went off on coaches and teammates. So there might be something to address there. At the present time, it's just something to pay attention to and take note of. Similarly, a headline was Jameis Winston, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers quarterback, is working out with free agent running back Adrian Peterson, which Andy then asked, well, where the hell is Doug Martin? Just to remind people, Doug Martin left the team in week 16 to enter drug treatment. Dirk Cutter has said, who knows what's going to happen next? Are we going to add a running back in the draft? Is Doug going to continue down the path to good health? And we have other guys we like at the position too. I don't know what's going to happen as I sit here today, but right now we have time on our side. Doug Martin does have a 3-game suspension awaiting him for whenever he returns to the team for the regular season. So that's where Doug Martin is. Adrian Peterson added to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers would be an interesting addition for sure. All right, I'm going to go around the horn and give each of you guys one last final thought, and we'll start with you, Ryan.
Jacksonville Jaguars, number one in my heart forever. But hey, Las Vegas, let's get a baseball team and a basketball team and just make this place just the number one sports town in the country. And let's prove all the doubters wrong and not go to San Antonio or Mexico City, even though, you know, that sounds fun. But still, let's keep it in Vegas. Let's make it happen, but also be Jaguars fans.
All right, Andy.
My final thought is the NFL is an amoebic, constantly evolving labyrinth, a beast, and that's the way it should be. And we might, you know, B-word and moan about all the things that they do or don't do and things that they change. Fact is, you know, it is what it is.
Kevin.
Final thought is, just want to inform all you Cowboys fans, if you don't know, Jason Witten has been signed to a 4-year extension. Probably not going to play it out. Sort of helps us with our salary cap down the line. But overall, I think it's a good thing because I think he's definitely a good asset for a still-developing Dak Prescott over the middle of the field. So that's good. And now that Romo's gone, at least we still have Witten.
Is Romo gone? He's still on the team.
I mean, but everyone knows he's gone. I mean, most likely I'm going to work with him at CBS, but who knows?
James.
Romo watch continues in the fine city of Houston. Outside of that, you know, I'm sorry, Ryan. Enjoy holding a $750 million taxpayer bag when 10 years from now the Oakland Raiders have decided that they need to tear down this brand new stadium for a better one.
I'm paying that $750 million just from my pocket.
Jared.
I didn't hit this earlier, but the Raiders moving to Vegas could affect the L.A. market in terms of there's a lot of Raiders fans still in L.A., and it's only about a 3.5-4-hour drive to Vegas. So any fans on the fence could be just keep their allegiance to the Raiders, and that could be a losing out of the market for the Rams and Chargers. And not so much the Chargers. The Raiders and Chargers fans hate each other. But yeah, as a Rams fan, I'm really glad the Rams aren't sharing the stadium with the Raiders because they're a team on the rise and they have a lot of fans in L.A. So I'm not too concerned about sharing a team with the Chargers because people in L.A. really don't care about the Chargers. But that could have an effect on the stadium in the next 2 to 3 years.
Two more. One headline that I was hoping one of you guys was going to bring up because we talked about it before the show. T.J. McDonald has an 8-game suspension coming to him. He's a free agent safety right now. So who knows what's going to happen there for him. Chris Long.
He met with the Dolphins.
He met with the Dolphins. Doesn't
he
mean
he actually found out. Him and his agent, obviously sitting in the same room, they actually found out about the suspension from the league office while they were sitting down with Mike Tannenbaum. Like they were chilling. Fun. Yeah, it's pretty funny.
And my final thought is Chris Long, the defensive end, signed with the Philadelphia Eagles. I had hoped that Long was going to be one of the defensive ends that the Patriots kept, but unfortunately, money and business dictates those sort of things, and clearly the Eagles were going to pay Chris Long a little bit more than what the Patriots were going to be willing to pay Chris Long. And so we bid adieu to Chris Long as us Patriot fans, and we await to find out what's going on with Malcolm Butler, because that's a situation that just seems to be going on forever, and one that I'm not interested in following unless it means Malcolm Butler remains a New England Patriot. All right, so there you go. What do you think about some of the latest things happening in the NFL? What do you think about teams moving around? Send us an email, nextfanup@gmail.com. Also, if you're driving in your car, don't send that email right now. But if you want to be a super fan and join us on this particular podcast, that's how you can get involved. We do have a couple of openings. The Buccaneers is an opening. The Lions, the Titans, the Panthers, I believe, is available, just to name a few teams. So send us those emails, nextfanup@gmail.com. You can tweet us at NFU Podcast. And of course, you can always read what we have to say on our Facebook Facebook page, facebook.com/NFU Podcast, but also our website, that is nextfanup.wordpress.com, where we have a couple of mock drafts and things like that. Speaking of drafts, next week we will redraft the 2013 draft. I promise you, I said we were going to do it this week, but clearly we had way too much stuff to get through. So next week we will redraft the 2013 draft, which will be a lot of fun. Hopefully you'll be here to join us. And of course, this Sunday we'll have another show available to you to enjoy. So make sure you're subscribed to the show on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher. Remember Alexa. Alexa loves to play the latest episode, so just ask her. She'll do it. And with that, I leave you with Jeff Fisher. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is 4 quarters long.
Good show.
Can we just get Jeff Fisher live to say that at the end of every show? It's not like he's busy right now.